Answers to readers. The first question is instructions to readers. By the way, I'm trying to do this little recording in one take. But if I were doing a voiceover, a 15-second voiceover to a TV or radio ad, there might be up to 3 people behind the glass, not including the sound engineer. All, including him, will have an opinion. And they also are trying to second-guess what the client might want, who may not be there. An hour is routinely consumed to record many, many takes, alternative interpretations of mood and tone. Could you be more jocular? Could you be touch faster? Even alternative wordings. Timing is down literally to the half second. I could go on about the intensive work involved in recording 15 seconds. A 9-hour audiobook would take years to read at that rate. Time is money. It is assumed that the chosen reader will hit the right tone and knows what she or he is doing. The producer follows the text, intervening if there is a misreading or a lack of clarity, rarely suggesting interpretation. It's a very personal business, reading a book, an imaginative and technically demanding exercise in absorption. What one tries to do is get right through the book, seamlessly. And of course, the only stops tend to be for fluffs. One does occasionally, or even quite regularly, fluff. Repellent characters. Usually the author wants his audience to be repelled to an extent. I'm thinking of that elderly clergyman the naive heroine in Middlemarch marries. I would revel in such a well-drawn character. And a great writer such as George Eliot leads one to even the most flawed character's point of view, how they view the world and other people, their obsessions, and since conflict is the essence of the drama of a book, part of that conflict, that tension, might be empathizing at the same time as deploring and understanding a character. How many times does one read an audiobook in a preparation? It depends. There is a story of a rather famous and distinguished and very good reader of audiobooks who turned up at a studio with a neatly wrapped brown paper parcel under his arm. And the producer said to him, "Isn't this a wonderful book?" And the said actor, who shall be nameless, said, "So everybody tells me," and began to open the parcel. Well, another story of somebody who was, again, an expert sight reader, of course, got to the end of a book and realized a revelation in the last chapter that one character should have had a foreign accent and hadn't had a foreign accent all the way through the book, so they had to go back and re-record every little utterance of this character throughout the book. Now, let me see. The last whimsy audiobook I did was The Attenbury Emeralds. Those were the days I was recording it near Googe Street over 4 days until about 5 p.m. and then walking from there to near the Aldwych, buying a nutritious sandwich and napping in my dressing room at the Duchess Theatre before performing in the musical Fantastics. Then, waking next morning to repeat the process. Peyton Welsh's segue into the world of 1951 seemed to me seamless and fascinatingly detailed, and the maturing of the relationship with Harriet quite perfect. And Bunter too. I read a section of the book at the launch, actually in the House of Lords, well, in an adjacent reception room in the Palace of Westminster overlooking the Thames. The Dorothy L. Sayers Society was there in force, and Norma Major. I'd been invited by the Majors to number 10 some years before, on the strength of Lord Peter and me, a commoner. Are there any plans for me to record The Late Scholar? I'm afraid it's too late. No, my last whimsy book was The Attenbury Emeralds. I bowed out with that. Whimsy, after all, is immortal, but with me it's a case of tempus fugit.